Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and often deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring behind those headlines while predicting how the events they explain will shape our world over the next 15 or 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms, which is not faith and it's not belief. No, it's evidence and reason, since his is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, please join with us. It's toll free, 877-300-7645. I was pondering yesterday whether or not it was reasonable to comment on the Pope Francis's most recent statement or just ignore it. I saw the headlines, first of the Los Angeles Times yesterday, and the picture that they showed of the event that I described briefly on the air yesterday, which was this long serpentine column of hundreds of people wide, stretching for miles, as the perfect depiction of the broad path actually having a serpentine or satanic imagery associated with it. The very thing that Yahweh said, that those on the broad path will all die, their souls destroyed. And then I read the caption underneath it, and it wasn't a million people, but an estimated 3 million people that not only showed up the night before for a prayer vigil, and not recognizing that God told them that if you're not Torah observant, I'm not listening to your prayer. In fact, your prayer is an abomination to me if you're not Torah observant. But nonetheless, they spent the night there, all camping out in a group faith fest to pay homage in a cult of personality to the Pope the following morning. Of course, on Sunday morning, completely ignoring God's instruction regarding the Shabbat. They don't like the God that their Pope claims to represent. In fact, they despise him. But they are certainly religious. There were 3 million people there. Imagine that. 3 million people all gathered together, all absolutely thumbing their fingers at God, making an absolute fool of themselves, ignorant, loving their religion, however. It was pathetic. Then this headline this morning from CNN. Reaction to Pope Francis's comment about "who am I to judge gays" has broken along two lines. Either this is a groundbreaking reversal by the head of the Catholic Church, or it's basically a guy talking on the plane. This was during his press conference on the way back from Rio de Janeiro to the modern-day epitome of Sodom and Gomorrah, the Vatican. When I read that, I said, you know, it's astonishing on two fronts that he'd make the statement, "Who am I to judge gays?" The first front is that you're claiming to be, you know, the vicar of on earth of God. And God makes it quite clear as to what he thinks about homosexuality. He, by the way, he only speaks of male homosexuality. He says it's an abomination. Now, God's not fixated on it. Among the things that he says that are displeasing to him, the things that he encourages us not to do, you know, homosexuality most certainly doesn't make the top 10 list. It's not etched in stone. It's very seldom mentioned. You know, it's kind of interesting that in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, there's very few actual references to sexuality. The fixation on a certain type of sexuality is really found in the writings of Paul, who was, by his own admission, a sexual pervert. Yes, in Romans 7, read it. He claims that he was an uncontrolled libertine, a sexual pervert. But In the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, there's one section where God says, you know, I'm going to tell you, give you some advice here. Don't engage in bestiality. Don't engage in incest. Don't engage in homosexuality. He goes through a series of things that he says. These are not good behaviors for you. And of course, they're not. They're counterproductive. And that's pretty much it. But how can you be someone whose institution claims is the spokesperson for God on earth and say you don't have the capacity to judge on something that God has made a clear and unequivocal statement on? Aren't you supposed to be representing what he has to say? I mean, I can judge homosexuality. God doesn't like it. I'm not imposing my opinion. That's not my conclusion. Just conveying what he said. Now, if I can do it, how come he can't do it? Unless the difference between us is I take Yahweh seriously and he doesn't know him. The second aspect of that is that he is, in essence, saying that papal decrees are meaningless. That this claim that a pope's decree is binding on the Catholic, in fact more binding than is Yahweh's own testimony, is torn asunder by that statement. This is not the smartest boy that has ever worn the red slippers and papal ring. CNN didn't consider any of those things. No, they just said, the truth is, and this is a CNN reporter now, trying to communicate truth. Now, when is he overstepping his bounds? He's not even a journalist, much less a truth teller. And yet, the CNN article actually says the truth is, it's neither. Just a guy talking on a plane, or a reversal by the head of the Catholic Church. What it really amounts to is a significant shift in tone, though not in substance. Now, we're talking about one of the most egregious problems of Roman Catholicism. That is that believing Paul, as opposed to Yahweh, they make service strictly a male affair, and that the males cannot even be married. Yahweh encourages marriage. Paul discourages it. They side with Paul. And when you are appealing only to unmarried men, you're going to get a disproportionate number of those men are going to be homosexual. Society as a whole, probably 2%. In the Roman Catholic Church, where they only are open to unmarried young men, it's probably 5 times that number, could even be higher than that, maybe 10 times that number, could be 20% of the total, wouldn't be surprised. And while there is, to my knowledge, no overwhelming connection between homosexuality and pedophilia, while I think that at least from the cases that I have read and the research that I've done, that a homosexual male is more likely to per capita to commit a pedophilic act than a heterosexual male. Because there are so many heterosexual males than there are homosexual males, the overall numbers are probably skewed towards the heterosexual male committing acts of pedophilia. Like, for example, Muhammad was heterosexual and he was a pedophile. But the biggest crisis in the Roman Catholic Church is still not only priests committing pedophilic acts against the young Catholic boys, but about the church covering it up. And so this is not a subject that the Roman Catholic Pope, the leader of that church, can say, who am I to judge? If you stop being judgmental, then you end up exonerating bad behavior. I mean, that is why political correctness is so destructive. It discourages people exercising good judgment, being discerning. And the moment you stop being discerning, you can't be moral. Francis made the mark on a freewheeling, unscripted press conference at the end of his trip to Brazil. And virtually everything this guy has said, unscripted, has shown that he really isn't very smart. He does not understand what that job entails. This is what he was asked when he was queried about the gay lobby that he has admitted exists in the Vatican. So his comments say that being homosexual is no big deal, doesn't care. Lobbying, he cares about that. So behavior, immaterial to him, but positioning, trying to convey an alternative view, trying even to influence. Lobbying is just to influence a view. No, we're not going to tolerate that. Lobbying for an alternative view, or even just lobbying for one position over another. No, this is a monotheistic organization, and the Pope is God. And no, we're not going to have anybody try to influence him. So he says, when I meet a gay person, I have to distinguish between them being gay and being part of a lobby. He said in a reply, if they accept the Lord, who is Satan, and have goodwill, as defined by whom, who am I to judge them? They shouldn't be marginalized. You know, there is no reason to marginalize anyone because of behavior unless their behavior affects others. Now, in the case of the Roman Catholic Church, they have a problem. Their priests have committed hundreds of thousands of acts of pedophilia. And it's the overwhelming preponderance of it is homosexual pedophilia of gay priests against little boys. They need to be marginalized. I mean, there is nothing more obvious than that is a serious problem. They need to be marginalized. But no, that's not, we're not going to consider that as a reason to marginalize them. All I want to know as Pope is are they trying to influence something? Because we don't want any influence around here. No, it's our way or the highway. I'm Yana. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Shattering Myths. I have a couple of more comments I'd like to make about the Pope's statement. One is that when he says, who am I to judge homosexuals, in life, you know, I've said it a thousand times, I don't care if someone's gay or not. It means nothing to me. And I'm an advocate of free will, so I want people to do what they choose to do and be free to do it without repercussions in this life. And so long as someone's activity doesn't negatively influence others, it means nothing to me. I mean, my issues with homosexuality are only in the promotion of it. When it's being promoted as normal, healthy, and good, when it is not those things, it is abnormal, extraordinarily abnormal. You know, it's a 50-to-1 abnormal in society, and it isn't healthy. Most homosexuals live, on average, much shorter lives than do heterosexuals, and it is not conducive to family, which is the epitome of what makes a community good or not so good. So, with that said, the Vatican actually issued a document back in 2005, not all that long ago, 7 years ago, and it was because of the propensity of homosexual priests to prey on young Catholic boys and commit acts of pedophilia. And so in 2005, they issued a document saying that men with a predominantly same-sex attraction should not be admitted to seminaries and therefore should not be ordained as priests. So the church is on record as saying, we've got a problem here. This is our policy. And then the leader of the organization says, I don't really care about the policy. And when you do that sort of thing, it's kind of like, again, the President of the United States saying, yeah, I've got a constitution, I've sworn to uphold it, but I'm going to ignore and actually work against the Second and the Fourth Amendment with gun control and with snooping on Americans. When you do that, you show that you cannot be trusted. Anytime anyone who is sworn to uphold the foundational documents of their entity, whether it be a religious entity or political entity, and then they openly acknowledge that they don't care about them and they're actually going to subvert them, you know that the institution and the individual cannot be trusted. It's another wake-up call for Roman Catholics. The second statement that he made relative to this is that he confirmed there would be a continual ban on women being priests. So he's willing to judge based upon sex. Oh, no, if you're a woman, you ain't coming in. But he's not willing to judge based upon sexuality. Pretty warped, huh? Turning to another extraordinarily warped and sad story, CNN brings us this from the trial of PFC Bradley Manning. After spending 3 years in custody, the man accused of the largest leak of classified information in U.S. history will learn today whether or not he has been found guilty of aiding the enemy. Now, the real issue here, folks, is who is the enemy? The documents that were released were State Department communiques that embarrassed the U.S. government because of the activities of the U.S. government. They were embarrassing to the U.S. government because of our attitude, because of our approach to things. The U.S. government, the more you know about the U.S. government, the more disgusted you would be by it. And that's what these documents did. They said the U.S. government is consistently manipulating and lying and deceiving, and that it has no moral core. So there, if you aided the enemy by revealing that the State Department of the United States is corrupt, and that was a huge percentage of these documents, then the enemy would have to be the American people, because they now knew that their government was corrupt. It made the government vulnerable to its own people. The second group of documents was regarding the strategy the U.S. military deployed in Iraq. Well, we had withdrawn from Iraq. Ancient history. All it now is a textbook as to what the United States did that caused so many fatalities, 1 million people died, caused such squandering of resources, we wasted what will ultimately be about $6 trillion on that war, and we made a bad situation worse. So you would think that any insights that could be provided regarding the strategy that had been used to squander 1 million lives, $6 trillion, and to make a bad situation worse would be useful, unless it was embarrassing to the U.S. military and if the enemy was the American people who would no longer support it. We'll be back in a moment to a shattering myth, talking about the documents that Bradley Manning released. And at the time they were released, I called it the last best hope for America. Of course, the country just yawned at the documents. What the documents proved is what I have been saying on the show, which is the American government ought not be trusted. It is rotten to the core, that this idea of patriotism is misplaced. They do not deserve it. They do not earn it. When you understand what the State Department and the military leaders and politicians are actually doing behind the scenes, what they don't want disclosed, you'd be repulsed by it. And that was the nature of those documents. So there were three sets of documents. The first was the documents from the State Department. And what they showed is how manipulative we are and how the United States would say one thing when we recognize that the opposite was true. So that was that only aided one enemy. And that is, if you think that the American people will lose confidence in their government when they know that their government isn't trustworthy, that's that first set. The second set of documents was, as I said, about the strategy used in the war in Iraq, which was at the time over. And so that would only aid the enemy If the enemy was the American people, and you required the American people to support the military as if the military was protecting your freedoms, as opposed to operating in a manner that was destructive to life, to property, and to the safety of America. And literally, invading Iraq was suicidal as it relates to the safety of America. The third set of documents was how the was a kind of a ground view of the war in Afghanistan. Now, in it, there's nothing that was released that was real-time information that would benefit the Taliban. In it, it was just strictly, here is a view of what has happened in Afghanistan, which is a place that we never should have been, that we shouldn't be at this day, that we have no chance of fixing. In fact, we've, in the 12 years we have been there, all we've done is make it worse. So who is the enemy? Larry, I ask you, what enemy did PFC Bradley Manning air by releasing the information about the U.S. military and its State Department?
The same enemy that Snowden unleashed. It's called transparency in government, something that we were promised by the current person who has his ass parked in the White House that we would get more of, I believe.
Well, yeah, that's a vivid explanation of the positioning of the current president. But yes, the problem here is that the government is doing things that the government does not want the American people to know. Because if you were actually aware and you were moral, you would stop being patriotic. You'd stop being political. You'd recognize there's a plug on both sides of the aisle in Washington, D.C., and that it is that our government does not deserve our support.
No, I mean, that's just correct. If our government was transparent, if people really saw, you know, how political actors and those who manipulate them enrich themselves at the cost of freedom, at the cost of lives, at the cost of any form of morality whatsoever, of course it would take a maniac to get behind that.
Yeah, Bradley Manning says, I believe that if the public was made aware of the data that was released, it would start a public debate on the wars. He said he was depressed about the situation there, meaning Iraq, where he was stationed as an intelligence analyst. That's the bottom line here, is that if people are informed and they're rational and they have a will to know the truth, to understand what's happening, and to respond in a moral, reasonable way, information is king. And in this particular case, he knew what you and I know, that if people are given good information and they genuinely want to examine it and consider it and to evaluate it, exercising good judgment, that they're prepared to make a reasonable conclusion or decision or choice. And so that's why he supplied the information. What did America do with it? Nothing. That's what is so sad about Snowden, what's so sad about Bradley Manning. They did the right thing. They did it for the right reasons. And yet their sacrifice has no value in a country that no longer values knowledge, understanding, or reason. So we're in a very sad situation, Larry. Yeah, we're in a sad situation. It's exactly the same experience that I have, and this is now on the political and military side, but it's the same experience that I have and you have every day on the religious side, that when you provide evidence and reason that proves that the religion of Christianity or Judaism or Islam cannot be trusted, that there is a 0% possibility that any one of those religions is true, Christianity, Islam, or Judaism. When the facts are known and you approach them using logic, it is impossible to trust any one of those three religions. They're obviously wrong. And yet when you present them using evidence and reason, the religious are oblivious to it, just as in the case of Bradley Manning and Snowden, oblivious politically.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, first off, you know, everybody says you have to read this and approach God in the right spirit. Well, if you were to approach, I mean, just as this example he used, if you were to approach Yahweh in the right spirit, you would understand he's not a religious deity. Therefore, trying to approach him in any religious manner would be what? It would be out of the correct spirit, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
And so, you know, I mean, we have the same thing here. I mean, how am I going to rah-rah, let's kill more people, let's spend more money, let's enrich a few companies that happen to be involved in defense contract spending or whatever, and let's kill people doing it, and let's get absolutely nothing out of it but loss of money and loss of life. If people really looked at it in that context,
right,
how could they get behind it? How could they be waving a flag and screaming the praises of really the military men being abused? I mean, if the truth be told, they're being treated like the proverbial, you know, redheaded stepchild. I mean, that's it.
The boots on the ground, many of them are being abused. That is true. They're being used inappropriately, and that's the reason why suicide rates of those returning from Afghanistan and Iraq are so alarmingly high, particularly among U.S. soldiers. They're being abused. The leadership, though, once you go up the ranks, I no longer pity them. They are abusers. They know the truth, and they are working against that which is good. What we have done with our military is make a bad situation worse, making America vastly more vulnerable in Iraq and Afghanistan. In Iraq, by toppling a secular dictator who kept that country under control but also kept that country adverse to Iran, we were in far better shape in terms of security of America, than giving Iraq to Iran, which is what we ended up doing, freeing Iran to complete its nuclear program. That was suicidal, counterproductive to America, and we haven't been willing to admit that yet. In Afghanistan, we simply pushed the Taliban out of Afghanistan into Pakistan while we're funding Pakistan with all sorts of weaponry, and while Pakistan has nuclear arms, making that country ever more vulnerable to the most fundamentalist Islamic elements. That's true is suicidal. We wrote our own death certificate.
Can I add something here? And it seems to me all we've done is up the opium production in Afghanistan.
And the abuse of women. We've done both.
Yeah, both. Yeah,
right.
One of the things that really, really upset me about the Afghanistan war, okay, we're in there, we're helping, shed light, we're bringing freedom to these people, and, you know, this was, I guess, about a year ago, so we'd been into it how many years by then? 10?
Yes.
I'm sitting there looking at the story of a woman who was given 200 lashes, before they took her outside and shot her in the head. I guess it took several days to give her 200 lashes because she kept passing out. I mean, that'll sure teach her never to do whatever she did ever again, you know.
Well,
why in hell would there be public displays like this if we were over there changing anything?
Well,
I don't want my tax dollars paying for trash
that. Before we invaded, there were videos that were circulated, a handful of them, where women were being judged by a circle of men, were being mistreated for some crime or another. And now that we have invaded, all we have done is increased the frequency of women being mistreated. In fact, every international reporting agency on human rights has said that the U.S. invasion, as it relates to the treatment and the conditions experienced by women, has made them worse. Not
then we just have to ask ourselves, do you want to fund making women's lives more miserable than they already are?
Or do you want to fund?
The answer is no. It wouldn't be a rational decision to do that, would it?
Opium. And if you were in the situation to make the judgment on Vietnam today, mm-hmm. knowing that you were going to sacrifice American lives, you were going to end up killing millions of Vietnamese, and at the end of all of that sacrifice of blood and coin, the situation was going to be worse than it was before you started. Would you send those boys and girls over to die? Would you squander that money? Would you kill that many individuals if you knew that at the end of your war, the situation would be worse than it was when you began? Would you do it?
Well, I'm sure that's a rhetorical question. Of course not.
Okay, so let's look at Afghanistan. There is and I wrote this about Afghanistan, and I said it publicly on radio shows before we invaded. I said there is a 0% possibility that we can leave Afghanistan better than we found it, that we will leave it worse than we found it.
People thought you were crazy and out of your mind, and not today. Most people would agree with you.
Yes, the facts are, and the U.S. military has actually acknowledged it as in internal documents. It was part of the documents that Bradley Manning released, is that the U.S. military 4 or 5 years ago wrote an internal document and said there is no way to prevail in Afghanistan. None. And so we know for certain that we will leave Afghanistan worse than we found it. So why did we sacrifice the lives? Why did we sacrifice the money? What moral reason can there be to squander blood and coin to make a bad situation worse? And why are we still there under these circumstances? That's what those documents gave Americans the opportunity to see. And yet most yawn and ignore them. We'll return with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we move on to our next topic, I do want to conclude the last topic by emphasizing a point that we made tangentially during the last segment, and that is that when it comes to rendering people in a position where they are immune to evidence and reason, where their reaction to news that is contrary to their view is held, that in the case of religion and politics, there is absolutely no distinction. The Bradley Manning treasure trove of documentation that proves that the U.S. State Department, the U.S. military cannot be trusted and have consistently undermined the best interests of the American people. That information, properly evaluated and reviewed, exercising good judgment, will render the conclusion that you ought not be patriotic or political. If the same information was presented from a religious perspective about Christianity, Judaism, or Islam, the exact same response would occur with the vast preponderance of listeners, and that is they would be unwilling and unable to process it. In this way, religion and politics are the same. I have one more news story here, Larry. From Reuters, President Barack Obama is going to propose a grand bargain for middle-class jobs on Tuesday, that's today, that would cut the U.S. corporate tax rate and use billions in revenues generated by a business tax to fund projects aimed at creating jobs. Now, think of that statement. First of all, it's a grand bargain, because he's a grand leader, but you're going to cut the U.S. tax rate, and you're going They're going to increase business taxes to cut the corporate tax rate so as to create jobs. Now, how could you say something that duplicitous? Now, it's amazing here. The middle class workers that actually are engaged in their own business, if you're middle class or even upper middle class, and if you have your own business, if you're engaged in small business, which so many Americans are, they're not taxed on the corporate level. Most of them are taxed on the individual level. And so their tax rate for their business, because they file it under their own names, they're doing business as a DBA as opposed to actually filing a corporate return. Those individuals are now paying a business tax of 39%, not 35%. And at 35%, America's corporate tax rates are amongst the highest in the world, which is why America is dying economically. But here's a guy who says, trust me, I'll cut the corporate tax rate from 35 to 28%, which still would be amongst the highest in the world. But I'm going to find other taxes that actually cause us to make more money from corporations. Now, it's just, it's astounding. Now, what he wants to do is he wants to have even a lower tax rate on American manufacturing, but a higher tax rate on earnings made abroad. Now, the United States has no jurisdiction on what a company does in another country. But now it wants to expand its reach into the pockets of international companies when they have an operation in another part of the world because they're doing business in another part of the world. And he also wants to have access at the tax codes that are employed towards business. And the first thing that the White House acknowledged is that they're going to change the rules relative to depreciation.
What?
Now, if you change the rules relative to depreciation to increase tax revenues, what you're going to do is you're going to allow companies to depreciate assets over a longer period of time, so it would be slower depreciation. And the longer over a period of time you do that, you discourage them from buying new equipment. And B, you create the illusion of profitability. It's like you buy a computer system for your business, and you have to depreciate it over 20 years, even though it has a useful life of 3. It creates this illusion of profitability
that doesn't exist. Sure.
That doesn't exist. That is now confiscated because the 35% of that is taken by the U.S. government.
Do you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like in many, many, many cases, they're putting their competition out of business.
Yes, and what they want to do is create jobs through government spending. So they want to take money from business that actually is creating something worthwhile and take it, steal it for government, and then have government be the great savior. Depend on us. We'll provide you with the job. We'll return to Shattering Myths, Turning to the Torah, when our program continues after the news and commercial break.